Before I quote what Heather wanted to quote, Chairperson, if you recall an example of the case during the SABC hearing, there was also a gentleman who was requested, as we have done. I think where you are not doing things for individual purpose. You are having a mandate from this committee. We are the people who have requested you to request him to come tomorrow, Thursday. And he responded by this. He refused. It's exactly what happened in SABC. One person was requested to come in an account. He said he can't attend in Kangaroo Court, referring to the committee, to the Kangaroo Court. But at the end, when the time goes on, when he wishes, he wanted to come to account to the committee. Therefore, I don't see that it is proper for us to allow him to come anymore, because we gave him a latitude to come. Number one, we said, you are more than welcome, but may you please put it down what you wanted to discuss with us. He refused. During your absentia, also when an acting chairperson requesting him to do so, also it was very difficult. For how long must it take for us to beg an individual? Who is he? And again, Chairperson, I will quote somewhere, but in particular for the executive purpose. You know, what is worrying me, Chairperson, is that, for an example, when the committee is faced with a situation wherein an official of the Department of Transport has requested to represent whatever, I'm making an example, né? Here is the following. In terms of the powers which are afforded to the committee as part of the oversight function granted to them, which allows for summoning of the department officials to account to the committee, Section 92.2 and 3 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, provided that members of the cabinet were accountable collectively and individually to parliament for the exercise of their powers and the performance of their functions, and that they must provide parliament with full and regular reports concerning matters under their control. I'm citing an example. I'm just motivating, Chairperson, that to me, we gave him an opportunity to come. We gave him an opportunity to submit. And here he quoted a lot of things in the Constitution, which is nothing wrong about it. But if we gave him an opportunity to come and then he refused to come, so what must we do? I think it's high time when we must also teach people outside this committee that we mean reality. If you are given an opportunity, use it. If you don't use it, oh, lolo. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Chair, from my side, especially after the past two remarks, I want to put it on record that, as Honorable Ramatlakane explained, he did engage with Mr. Ngadi, and he shared this with the committee, and he also tabled the document at that stage that was available for us to read. Then, in light of the report which he has submitted, and I think we should also recognize the fact that it was done under the Department of Transport heading, and that he signed it, making this a very official document under a very particular heading, therefore carrying a very particular status, which should be dealt with also in a particular way, I would imagine. But Chair, although we gave opportunity, the opportunity is not passed. It is not over. We are still within the window period of a particular function of this committee, which includes that he should be given the opportunity, which I would submit in all fairness and decency from our side, that we should pursue and invite him formally, but then also make it clear that we are in anticipation of finalizing this phase, and thereafter there would not be the same opportunity, since we are in a particular phase in processing consideration around this particular bill. Then in terms of teaching people lessons, I don't think this is what the committee should do. I honestly differ from my respectful and respected colleague. It might be a bit of emotion that plays into that position, but we are not here to teach people anything and any lessons. We are here in terms of this phase of the engagement around developing legislation for the country, where we should hear and listen. And therefore, I would want him to reconsider that position. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Teko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. Chairperson, this is my first experience to deal with a matter like this, when we, as committee, we receive a letter in the letterhead of a department stating the things that are stated here. Chair, what makes it difficult is that this very gentleman is an employee of the department, which is supposed to use this influence inside the department using the correct channels. In the letter, the gentleman is stating reasons why he declines to come in front of the committee, stating that ourselves, as committee members and the committee itself, are not showing commitment. He is also stating that since he has told us that he's going to refer the matter to Parliament and the President, I can safely say, Chair, we are members of Parliament. Even if it is referred to Parliament, ourselves, through you, will be in a position to answer to this. It may not be correct, Chair, to say we want to teach him a lesson, but we must also educate the gentleman how to do things. The advice that I gave one day was that this gentleman, Mr. Mgadi, should appear in front of the committee in his personal capacity. Now that he is using the letterhead of the department, it makes things very difficult for us. I think what I can suggest is, Chair, can we also copy the minister and the acting DG to say, here is a letter that we have received as a committee coming from one of your employees. My other advice would be, let's also, because even if the items here can make sense, but the way they are written, it makes one not to consider them. But can we refer it to our legal team inside Parliament, just to ask what must we do with regards to what is in front of us here? But Chair, it makes things very difficult. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think honourable members have made proposals. Do we still want to deliberate on the matter? We just want to check. Honourable Sibande Ramatlakane.
Chairperson, with the due respect, what is worrying me, let me allude on what a lot of people indicated. The person whom we are dealing with He knows very well the procedures. He used the letterheads of the transport departments. My question, if I'm doing an introspection, what is his aim and objective? Is he wanted to embarrass the department, or what is his intention? What is his intention? Because, for an example, as I've quoted, I'm sorry for my colleagues, I've quoted what he wrote. He indicated that thing is supposed to go for internal. If he knew the procedures, and he quoted from the Constitution, he quoted from the Constitution in orders of 57.1b, that this thing is supposed to be in an internal function. He knows the procedures. Okay, we ourselves, we gave him an hand. We said, no, come to us. You are more than welcome. Even in then, he refused to come to us. So what must we do then? Where is the problem? Because the problem is not with us. I will understand if we rejected him. We never rejected him. From the chairperson to the acting chairperson, we never rejected him. Even now, we never rejected him. For example, when I can put it clearly, he spoke to the chairperson telephonically. The chairperson said, no, put it down. He fails to put it down. He spoke to the acting chairperson. He did something down. That's when we said, yes, come. Third time, of which is supposed to be tomorrow, he is refusing to come to us. That's why I differ with the people who have said to that we must give him a chance again. While we gave him a chance, more than three times we gave him a chance to come to us, and he is refusing, and is quoting the Constitution that this matter doesn't belong to us. It belongs to internal function. That's why I've got a problem, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, Chair, now, just briefly, I think, Chair, we must also defend Mr. Mugadi's right to make his views known to the committee. There's nothing wrong. He must be protected. That right is a right that every citizen and every citizen of the country has in terms of engaging. And I would want to extend it beyond that to say I don't think that it should be, and I heard the view from a colleague on the other side saying I suppose the letter should be, or the matter should be dealt with in a particular way, the letterhead of the department and so on. What I want to say is that I don't think that necessarily this matter that he raised, this matter with the issue, the manner in which he raised them, should somehow make him a victim. He should not be victimized on this process. He's got the right to write to us. He can use harsh words to us. We must accept that. And there's no emotions here at all. I think that's where I'm starting from. And it is correct for Mr. Mugadi to bring to this committee's attention anything that he see or thinks is unconstitutional in terms of our constitution. It happens all the time. I mean, he quotes the Act here of 1996. It's possible that certain aspect of that piece of legislation, if it was done before the Constitution was adopted, that there's something that may creep in. So it's possible that he's got a point that we need to look at. And therefore, we are much poorer if he doesn't appear before the committee to present that argument in order for us to be able to consider that piece of legislation, because the pieces of legislation he refers to, they are all within the domain of this committee, because they are all in transport. So, Chair, I want to say that the last point is that I think we should ask him nicely to come to the committee. I did say so, because we're going to benefit from coming to the committee. But that is not the sum total of my suggestion. My suggestion also included that we would need to respond to this letter in full, because it's a letter presented to us. Because if we don't respond to it, and later this letter becomes another letter in a constitutional case, state versus Gadi, or state versus who, and this letter would be part of the evidence there attached, and we would have not done anything with it. So we need a really well-considered response on this particular letter, because it makes the constitutional issues. So that's why I was saying that I think we should ask him nicely, and we should respond to it, and the committee must be briefed somehow in terms of these constitutional issues that are raised in here. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. In summarizing, our honourable members has raised three critical issues that we should look at. The first thing will be to refer this letter to the legal for legal advice or opinion from Parliament, and then we are able to respond to Mr. Mgadi. Coupled with that is the fact that we should invite him to still come, because the we believe that probably he will be able to assist, particularly mentioning the several of the acts which he believes are unconstitutional. We would request him to indicate the unconstitutionality of all those acts that he's mentioning in this letter, so that we get schooled and become learned like he is. And lastly, honourable members have indicated that we should be able, we should copy the minister this letter, which is on the letterhead of the department, to just indicate that we've got a functionary who actually, probably he was trying to exhaust the internal processes and couldn't, and he is also not happy about the processes of the committee that the minister and the acting DG are appraised of the developments that the Mr. Stanley is trying to do in to try and assist. But I concur with members that let's give him that latitude, benefit of doubt, and the latitude, so that he can be able to come here and we're able to engage with the issues. Unlike the way he is writing, it becomes a troubled soul with nowhere to fall. A fallback should be either in Parliament or somehow. And if we don't assist, then it will get it will just continue like that. So my take from what honourable members have indicated are those three issues. I don't know if there's one that I might have omitted by chance. I wanted to close it like that so that we're able to move to the next, which is the regulations. Going? Gone. Thank you very much. Mr. Chue, say.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning to you and to the members. We appreciate the opportunity to provide further feedback of the considerations that we have made in respect of the comments that the members have raised. I just want to start with two things. Firstly, before I hand over to Mr. Tsuletsane to take us through the process, I want to start with an advisory and a little bit of a disclaimer. Number one, the advisory, in the sense that we are dealing with an extremely complicated process in terms of the ARDO. It may not be a voluminous act in itself. However, the regulations are quite detailed, taking into consideration everything else that is embedded on. And we have to emphasize this point, given the fact that there is a direct interrelation between the ARTO Act and the National Road Traffic Act in terms of the description and the categorization of all traffic violations that can be committed. So we're anchoring all the ARTO infringements as well as the categorized offenses on the basis of what is provided in the National Road Traffic Act. Similarly, there is also a direct importation and the implications in terms of what comes out from the NLTA, the National Land Transport Act, those possible infringements that could be committed by operators, consigners, consignees, everybody that works within the public space. The second part of the comment that I wanted to be able to make is, yes, indeed, as members had requested that we provide the supporting regulations, I just want to emphasize that it becomes quite an extremely difficult and tedious exercise because of the detail of what is contained in those regulations, with the need to ensure that the biggest challenge is always going to be ensuring the technical correctness and the accuracy of the cross-referencing, those applicable to the Act and as well as to the regulations. And the regulations are divided into a number of schedules. Schedule 1, just to quickly take you through the process. When you talk about the supporting regulations, there are other aspects that Mr. Sulatsani had mentioned when it came to the impact, when he was discussing the second document in terms of what would be the cost implications that the issuing authorities are going to bear. And this with a view towards coming up with a solitary unified system that categorizes all infringements and offenses, all traffic violations, and place them on the same equitable base. Regulations you would find in the main body of it, and then it has a number of schedules. Schedule 1 then describes all the supporting forms from ARTO 1's through to ARTO 33. For reference, let me remind members, the most important forms, I just want to be able to emphasize this. When we're talking about ARTO 1s, when Mr. Tsulatsani makes reference, ARTO 1s, those are the handwritten notices, the primary basis of what would have a direct impact in terms of increasing road safety, because you are able to eliminate any possible challenges related to the service. So there is no question about the service of documents, because an officer stops you by the side of the road and they give you a handwritten notice. So ARTO 1 is the preeminent notice that we have. The second one is ARTO 2. ARTO 2 almost has the same effect as ARTO 1's. It is issued directly to the infringer, and it typically happens in the way bridges. And it will be for those infringements that may be applicable to the driver and also to the operator. And I want to take a specific example that Honorable Sibande had raised previously. When you were talking, Honorable, about that the need to be careful about the impact that it has on poor people and the communities, and we're making an example about public transport. Honorable Maswanganyi had specifically raised the issue when you gave an example about students around Wits University, that those students, you need to be able to take specific consideration. So you would have a situation where I, as a taxi driver, are issued with an infringement notice because the taxi I'm driving is unroadworthy. You therefore cannot hold me as a driver accountable, because it is the duty of an owner that carries the responsibility for the roadworthiness of that vehicle. So ARTO 2 is then issued by the side of the road. It is automatically captured, and you are able to use electronic force in the sense of the electronic gadgets that may be given, they're issued by the side of the road, even at the way bridges. And then comes the third category, what we call ARTO 3s. ARTO 3s, I want to emphasize, the overwhelming majority of the infringement notices are actually ARTO 3s. They are electronically issued. And this is the advice that we've been given to all the issuing authorities, that we need to strategically move away from over-concentration of the R23s, because the over-concentration of R23s do not make any impact on road safety. Basically, you have cameras, they keep on churning out because they are placed at a position that we know this is a demarcated 60 kilometer per hour zone. You get caught doing 71 kilometers, 80 kilometers. So the critics of the system has always said, what you're doing is just basically just a money-generating scheme. So the overwhelming majority, in the annual report that we have published, 2014-2015, the total distribution at that point was about 97% at one point, were only R23s. And the remaining 2.96% were handwritten notices. Because if you rely on R23s, you will not be able to see that Jeff Chue is driving drunk. You will not be able to detect that Jeff Chue is driving an unroadworthy vehicle. That is basically just a moving coffin. So, honorable members, it's those three important categories. R21s, handwritten. R22s, issued by the side of the road also, but having an impact on the operator of the vehicle. Or, in the case that it is a public transport vehicle, that will be given to the owner, not to the driver of that particular taxi. R23s, being the overwhelming majority, it is just electronically issued notices. So, Schedule 1 of the R2 regulations categorizes and gives you all the forms that are applicable from R21 through to R33. And we give examples and we publish that, as Mr. Solotani indicated yesterday, we have published that and we acquire them through the government printing services. All the issuing authorities will just be placing their own orders, and for every one of those forms that will be issued, R21s in particular and R22s and 3s, they would have a specific numerical distributed sequence that will be issued. And then we have Schedule 2 of the regulations. So it's the main regulations, Schedule 1 that deals with all the forms, and then we have Schedule number 2. Schedule number 2 then details the applicable costs that are being levied for every type of service. It will indicate how much it is to send mail by ordinary mail, how much it is to send by registered mail, how much it is if you're going to make application for revocation or anything that you are able to do. We then have the cost implications that are included in Schedule 2. The most important in terms of the regulations then come to Schedule number 3. Schedule 3 lists every single one of the transgressions that you find embedded in the National Road Traffic Act. And there's a number of things that are important in Schedule 3. The first part is it would include the description of the specific section of the law and regulation that has been broken. Second part, it would include a summarized description and then as well as a detailed description. The next aspect that is indicated in Schedule 3 is the applicable demerit point that goes with the transgression of that act. The applicable demerit point. It is also, when it comes out to the demerit points, it is not every single one of the transgressions that would have a demerit point that is applicable. The next thing is the applicable penalty amount that is given, as well as the applicable discounted portion. In the current regulations now, the applicable discounted portion is an automatic 50% that is given. So if this infringement is 250 rand, it indicates This is the applicable penalty, 250, the infringement value being 125, and the discounted portion being 125. If later on the discounted value is no longer 50%, becomes 20% or whatever percentage, that is why you will be able to see what the difference is. And the last part that is also very important, it will indicate in the case where it is operator-related infringements, you will see the specific section of the act that is being transgressed. For example, when it comes out to public transportation, most of them will relate to Section 49 of the National Road Traffic Act, as well as what the implications are in terms of the National Land Transport Act. So when we draft these applicable regulations, Madam Chair, I just want to emphasize that the highly interactive nature of not only having to cross-reference on the Act, but also in respect of the applicable regulations, as well as determining the nature and the type of the form that we are the ones that have been creating them. And members would then appreciate the intense work that is actually taken to be able to deal with each and everything in there. It is one of the good things that what we are able to do here shows you the expertise within the RTIA as well as the department to be able to come up with all this kind of arrangements and the determination of everything else that happens in them. It is on the basis of a scientific formula and processes that you are following. We have also taken into consideration some of the major comments that have been coming as we are deliberating. So, Chairperson, do bear with us when Mr. Tsuletsane takes us through that whole process. We have included some of the other elements, and the specific cross-reference you would find currently to an extent only in the amendment bill. But we would also, when we deal with the regulations, ensure that the cross-referencing in the amendment bill, that's why we want to wait until the end of the process, but suffice for the moment to be able to recognize that the operational mechanisms, what you would find issues such as the infringement appeals tribunal, similar to what we have included in chapter 20, section 25 and part 19.2b, when we're dealing with the mechanisms of establishing an infringement appeals tribunal, there are certain elements that needs to then be able to go into the regulations. We recognize that Honorable De Freitas had also made that comment during that time that it gives the committee better understanding if you are able to consider the amendment bill together with the supporting regulations in this respect. So this then becomes the first attempt, but I want members to take that into consideration that the detail of the regulations can only be finalized and once we come to a position that we say this is exactly how the bill is then going to be looking like, then we can spend the related amount of time to be able to do that. The secondary part that is also very important is what we making pronouncements in terms of the rehabilitation programs. We have recognized a lot of interest that has been shown by members and the general comments made by the public. For example, when it comes out to the electronic communications. When it comes out to electronic communication, do not expect too detailed regulations in this because we are not the primary source of functionary when it comes to that. And we have to be careful that we keep the legislation in alignment with other pieces of legislation. So the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, as long as we make attendant references there, it is something that will then be able to benefit in there. So with that background, I think members would have a better understanding, but we just want to be able to give you foresight into how those regulations are going to be. Allow me then, Chairperson, to hand over to Mr. Tsuletsane. You would also see we keep working on this on different occasions. You will see as we present it, we did submit to the committee secretary. I'm not sure whether they would, will be able to have it projected. or we project it from there. Yes. Okay. While we're trying to sort it out, Honorable Chairperson, you will see the other comments are highlighted in different colors. And the reason for those different colors is based on when these comments had been made and the related updates. Some of them, the ones that you would find in red, are the ones that we want to remind ourselves to continue to apply our minds thoroughly on that. Some of them are made in blue, and the ones that are made in blue and the ones that are made in green, you would find that we would have had perhaps engagement with the state law advisor, with the parliamentary the legal advisors. But we want to also give you confirmation that we keep on engaging, so that at the end of the process, we also want to short-circuit the time that it takes. So it is not only Artia, but with the department, the state law advisor, as well as the parliamentary legal advisor, so that the process could be very well-rounded and comprehensive in how we deal with it. I would not want to give a sermon, so allow me, Chairperson, to hand over to Mr. Tsholetsan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Chue. And good morning to honorable members. As Mr. Chue has already indicated, that we had to work on the regulations. We have draft regulations that deals with everything else within the Act. However, for the purpose of this committee, I thought I need to highlight the issues that were raised and are in line with what we are dealing with. What you have done, honorable members, we looked at our old regulations, and in practice we found that certain things that are in there, even the way they were drafted, they are not making sense. They make it very difficult for people to comply. They make it very difficult for us to do certain things. So we took the whole set of regulations and revamped those regulations. So what you have in front of you, even if you can go to the old regulations and try to cross-reference, you won't be able to do that, because the regulation sequence has changed. So please mind that if you want to cross-reference with the old regulations, you will not be able to do that. You rather go to the headings and make sure that you look at the headings rather than the numbers. Okay? Now, in this current ones, Chairperson, you remember that the bill has got an issue that deals with appeals tribunal, and in that regard, we actually went and looked at what is it that we are talking about in order for us to make reference to appeals, the processes that are involved in this appeal. So on page, I think it's page 14 of those drafts that I've sent, we are dealing with the appeals there. We deal with the manner of the manner in which a person may appeal, and then we made reference to the relevant sections that are still in the amendment bill. So what we have done is to make sure that what is in the amendment bill, we put it into the draft regulations. As we said, Chairperson, it's a very difficult task, remembering that you don't know whether this will be accepted or not in the bill. So it's very difficult for you to deal with such things, because the bill is not yet. So we are trying to make sure that whatever we can do now, we just show the members that this is how it can look like when if the bill goes through. Chairperson, I'll go now to page 17 of the document. That page 17 it's at regulation 12. Chairperson, I'm advised that I need to show the members the inclusion of 8A. As you go down, that the same on the appeals, it's lodging of appeals that we have put in there, and there's a little detail that needs to be reworked and make sure that it is in line with the processes of appeal or review in terms of administrative law. So we must still work on this thing to make sure that administrative law, all the rules that apply there, we actually cover them as they should. And then we have the 8B that we are going to put processes and time frames of when to do this and how long should you be advised after the appeal, all those sort of things in terms of administrative law. They must come in. We are also going to have to look at Administrative Justice Act and promotion of Administrative Justice Act, also a promotion of access to information in order to align some of the things that you are going to put here. We also have an issue that deals with notification of sittings, how we are going to notify people that there is a sitting, and what should happen, should the people attend, and what is the related issues that we deal with in terms of travel of those people or attendance, summoning of those people, all sorts of things that we need to put in there. We also have 8D, which we are looking at proceedings, the records of proceedings and decisions. How do we deal with those decisions, and how do we communicate the decisions and advise the people whether they can appeal to the court and so forth and so forth. All that information needs to be in the regulations so that people understand and they know their rights are not being violated, and what is it that they need to do in cases where the decisions are not in their favor. Chairperson, as I said, I will not go clause by clause in terms of some of the things that are there. However, I will go to those that I know the committee had particular interest on. You'll see there on this page is a note that says provision for no discount full payment after tribunal ruled in favor of the authority, or in case a person is trying to escape liability and this person wants to go to the appeals tribunal on a case that does not have merit. Once he has done that, and this is something that Honorable Homsinga was talking about yesterday, once the decision has been done, what now? The person needs to have his 32 days in order for him to pay. And we are saying here, yes, the 32 days will be there. However, the issue of discount is no longer there. Just like we're doing after representation, the issue of discount is no longer there after we have undertaken. So this is something that we want to deal with under that blue clause that I indicated there. And then we'll go now, Chairperson, to that page. 17, Regulation 12, this is an issue that within the Act itself, you'll remember, I think it's Johannesburg Chairperson that made a comment where we are saying those authorities that do not comply, issuing authorities that do not comply with the law, they need to be punished so that we can dock some penalties from their revenue. And it was said that we, as RTIA, we should also be held responsible if we are not going to perform according to the SOPs and the time frame. So this is something that deals with that particular aspect on penalties payable by issuing authorities and the authority, the authority being the RTIA. Chairperson, I'll now go to page 18. Page 18, Chairperson, right at the top, we are talking about demerit points, and on Regulation 14C, Chairperson, what we are doing there, we are trying to be in line with what the state, the parliamentary law advisor and the state law advisor advised the committee on in relation to the issue of infringement, if demerit points when a person is found guilty in a court of law. You'll remember that, Chairperson, the state law advisor and the parliamentary advisor advised that if a person has been found guilty in a court of law for an offence, we as RTIA should not say this person will have demerit point. It should be at the discretion of the court to say should this person have a demerit point or not. So this is what we are trying to cover in terms of that, so that we are not found in the legislation to be saying something else, and on the Act we are going to say something else in terms of the courts. Item 3, subsection 3, Chairperson, and in this case I'm talking particularly of subsection 3B, it deals with the issue that the committee was very worried about, and I remember that on that day, I thought this bill will not fly. Honorable Maswanganyi was very worried that, I think even Honorable Sibande, that the drivers are going to have to bear demerit points for issues that relate to vehicle fitness, that the vehicle that is not theirs, an operator vehicle, then that. So we dealt with this issue, Chairperson. You'll remember that every time I refer to Section 49, where it talks about the operator, responsibilities of the operator. Now here, we made sure that the driver shall not incur demerit points for issues that relate to the vehicle itself. That's what we have done in terms of B. If the vehicle is not roadworthy, it's an operator vehicle, the driver will receive the penalty. And in terms of the penalty itself, because of his responsibilities of not having to drive a vehicle that is unroadworthy, he must deal with the penalty. However, when it comes to the demerit points, it is stated there that demerit points shall not be carried for those, just to try to protect the drivers in terms of their demerit points record. We cannot give them demerit points for things that are vehicle-related and it's not their vehicle. Chairperson, page of Regulation 14, five, I think it's on page, let me just see, 18, 19, it's on page 19, we're talking there about sub-regulation 5, total number of demerit points. You'll remember, Chairperson, that total number of demerit points is actually 12, the threshold is 12. Now we looked at how are we going to deal with those people that are carrying a holder of learner's licenses. And in this case, we are saying let's prescribe that those who are holding learner's licenses and drive on our roads and then they commit infringements and there's going to be demerit points that are against their names. When it comes to six, as a learner, you go to six, that should be the threshold and that should actually be the threshold that says you must go to rehabilitation as a learner driver. For the driver, it must be 12. If it must be a suspension, that makes you to go there, mandatory. But for learners, when it's 6 demerit points, it must be mandatory that the learner must go for rehabilitation. Okay? So that's what we are trying to deal with there in terms of demerit points of learners. On the same page, Chairperson 6, and this is something that still needs to happen all over the regulations. We are just trying to deal with the issue that we dealt with under, I think, Section 25, where we dealt with the documentation that needs to be dealt with. You'll remember that we said NLTA issues, they will be in here. As a result, we put in permit, card or license as some of the things that can be dealt with. So we are just trying to include those things. Is it Section 25 of the amendment? Yeah. The amendment in Section 25, we are trying to deal with that. Chairperson, going forward, page 22, Regulation 17. Just quickly want to go to Regulation 17. I need to put it there. Chairperson, you'll see in the document there's green. Where there's green, you'll see every green that is there in terms of the headings. It's about disqualification. What we realized, Chairperson, was that we always referred in the regulation to suspensions. But when you go to the Act itself, there's no way where it talks about suspension. It talks about disqualification. So if you are suspended. The word suspended is actually disqualify you from operating a vehicle. So what we have done, we are just aligning the regulations with what is in the Act in terms of those words disqualification. Cancellation is there where, you know, your license will be cancelled. And subsection 1, the chairperson, what we particularly subsection 1B, 2, we are trying to deal with issues of rehabilitation programs. We are saying a person must be subjected during this qualification to an approved compulsory rehabilitation program. Now, Chairperson, here what we need to do is to make sure that these weights, like compulsory, like mandatory, voluntary, we still have to clean this, because if you can look at that, it says here compulsory, and somewhere in the regulation we are trying to put, to introduce this word mandatory. So we still have to clean those kind of issues in the regulations, so that there's consistency in what we are talking about, as well as the fact that it's not all rehabilitation programs that are going to be compulsory. There will be voluntary ones, and there's going to be mandatory ones. 17.3 deals with the attendance of rehabilitation programs that must be arranged by the infringer, and this deals particularly on the subsections, the ABC, the kind of rehabilitation programs that might be considered. Chairperson, initially in our draft regulations, we had under this, we had people must go to trauma units of hospitals, to mortuaries. We had those kind of things here initially. But when we realized that this would not be necessarily a mandatory issue, there might be voluntary issues, there might be mandatory issues. So we had to deal with that, and I remember the committee had a strong sentiment against the fact that we should send people to those areas. So we had to remove that and make sure that we just deal with matters that can assist them, and then these matters must actually be available for both mandatory and voluntary. I can imagine if we're talking about going to a trauma hospital here and want to say make it voluntary, nobody would go to that one. So that's why you had to remove some of the things, Chairperson. 17.3, it's the one that deals with the types of rehabilitation programs. And 17.4 to 7, it deals about the procedures of surrendering of applications and so forth. That as well need to be cleaned. Regulation 18, that's the other one that I had to deal with, Chairperson, is notification of disqualification. Here, Chairperson, we need to be very, very, very sensitive and very, very clear as to how we are going to do this. This is where we are going to inform people whenever their demerit points are at a certain level and they need to go mandatory. So this one, Chairperson, we alerted, so it's something that we are going to work with in terms of the processes and make sure that we align it with all other processes that are required in terms of the law. Chairperson, I'll now go to, I think that should be the issues of application procedure for rehabilitation, and that is captured in page 26 of the document. As I indicated, Chairperson, you remember that when we had a discussion, we actually looked at what are the issues that will be applicable in terms of the applications and the procedures, and then I just noted the issues that need consideration that are going to be drafted in a legalistic way in order for us to deal with this thing. For instance, application to attend this rehab must be made by an infringer, and what are the related forms, and where should that form go? No, you see that in this, where there's red here, all these issues are issues related to rehabilitation programs that just need to be drafted in a legalistic way, and so that we can put this in the sections of the regulation. Page 27, Chairperson, as I indicated earlier, there we are talking about mandatory referrals or rehabilitation, attendance of rehabilitation. As we indicated, a learner's license holder must be 6 demerit point and we must attend mandatory rehabilitation of rehabilitation school in order for the, before they can go for licensing. We are just looking at a scenario where we leave a young man who's got a holder of, who's a holder of a learner's license, and then he carries 12 or 13 demerit points, as the law was saying. Then by the time he goes for licensing, his license is already suspended. It doesn't make sense. So we thought we should actually act before the person actually reaches the threshold of suspension, so that this person can be brought into the fold and behave better on our roads. Chairperson, page 27 of the document, still the same page at the bottom there, is application for voluntary. As I indicated earlier, we are making a distinction between voluntary and then we are also mandatory, so that those that are suspended or those that are found guilty in court, the court can actually take a decision whether they are going to send them to rehabilitation or what is going to happen. If they are suspended, and then they should go to rehabilitation. But in terms of voluntary, as we are discussing with the committee, in instances where a person is carrying 3 demerit points and this person believes that he wants to clean his record, he may as well go to rehabilitation, and then we can clean those demerit points that are against their name. So we are making a distinction between the two, and that needs some little bit of attention so that we can finalize that. Chairperson, in terms of what is in the amendment bill, as Mr. Chue indicated, the ones that we did not want to fiddle with too much was the service of documents electronic, because that is catered for in another act, which is the one giving us the authority to do that. So we, in terms of this, I think, Chairperson, I've covered the areas that needed to be covered, save to just make sure that we show the committee. I think Mr. Chue was referring to the annexures or the schedules of Chairperson, we have already dealt with this issue under D. How do we going to deal with appeals? Are they going to be sent? Where are they going to be sent? And what are the issues related to the email addresses and so forth that we are going to create for each and every transaction? We have emails for representation. We have emails for nomination. So we must create one for appeal, so that the person, the designated person, has got this email, and every appeal that comes through can receive attention. So, Chairperson, the schedules that Mr. Chu was talking about, just for the benefit of the committee, these are the kind of documents that Mr. Chu was referring to. You'll see that it has... This is Schedule 3 that Mr. Chu was referring to. Schedule 3 deals with the infringements, the demerit points that are attendant to that at the top of the document. So these are the type of schedules. Already we have dealt with the schedule. All we have to do is to look at the legislation, and then we can just try to to change whatever needs to be changed. You remember some of the members from PUSA, they were talking about demerit points being levied on everything else. We can prove, even in this document, that it's not everything that has got demerit points. Let me take this opportunity, Chairperson, again, to show the committee schedule 4. Schedule 4 is about issuing authorities, how many issuing authorities do we have, and their codes. We've got national issuing authorities, cross-border, national parks, RTMC, SANRAL, SAPS, and then we have local issuing authorities. Each and every one has got this code, so there's no way that you'll find another code being used for another one. I'll also go to Schedule 5, Chairperson, which is Schedule 5 is the one that deals with how police officers are going to deal with ARTO issues. The police, SAPS, at some point, they indicated that they don't want to be issuing authorities and have the difficulty of doing administrative work in terms of notices. So they will be receiving books from issuing authorities that the police station is, and then they can actually capture their books there. Chairperson, these are the schedules that are there. We've got Schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Schedule 6, it's about a standard operating procedures. The reason we took, and I think Honorable Humsinga was asking, are that people are going to provinces, they'll be doing what they like, and I refer to SOPs. Now, what we realized was an SOP is just an SOP. But what we said we are going to take it, those SOP, and put it within the regulation so that they become law. Nobody should actually escape those. So what we have done, we have put them as an annexure, and then they will become law, and nobody can actually do as they like. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tsuletsani. Honorable members, there we go. This is the proposed preliminary regulations, which actually is work in progress, like as indicated by Mr. Tsuletsani. Are we going to be engaging on the matters? Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair. I seem to lack finding the schedules and the issuing authority, those lists that you referred to. If we could get those as well, it would be nice and useful. Right at the beginning, I slipped on which particular section that was, but it was the whole situation which at first I thought was a great idea, where the owner would not be kept liable for the infringement of the driver upon nomination. How do we protect drivers for being nominated unfairly? Which obviously is a next level thought, but I just foresee the opportunity within the nomination process. So would we then allow a mechanism, or could we consider a mechanism in protection of a faultfully appointed driver? Because you might end up with owners just nominating drivers as a type of sanction, not just referring to taxis, but also in terms of rental companies. You might have exactly the same thing. That just to get rid of the demerit points ending up with a ownership of some sort, they simply designate and nominate people that have left the country, or, you know, that type of thing. Then, in terms of the issuing authorities, I recalled a piece of legislation which is currently being considered, and I don't know how far it is, and that's why I'm keen to also have a look at the issuing authorities, and I'm referring to the Border Management Act,
of Border Management Amendment Act, whether we have also, whether we've been thoughtful of that legislation which is in progress to also include that in the list. Other than that, Chair, I think we must really study the document, and I want to thank the opportunity of getting it in this particular form, because this makes it very helpful, because we've also addressed issues in the Principal Act, and it really has become very difficult to, you know, put this puzzle together. So thank you for having this in draft form, or presenting it in draft form. It is very helpful, and it does give a new insight in the process. Thank you.
Thanks.
thank you, Chair. I think as you made the comment that this is work in progress, it will be difficult for us as legislators to predetermine what the executive is going to do, because our responsibility is to deal with the amendment bill. After that, the executive put down the rule that says that this is how things are going to be done. Moreover, we haven't as yet passed the amendment bill. So I think there are parameters within which we can go into regulations, because the regulations and the bill or the act are not necessarily the one thing. We deal with the act, then the executive deals with the regulations. So you have to give guidance, Chairperson, as to whether we can go into details discussing even the draft, which I doubt we are not supposed to do so. So it's more for information. As to if the bill passes, this is what the executive wing anticipate how the regulations are going to look like. It's like we are giving a name to a baby who's not even yet born. It's not allowed in our African culture. Thank you, Chair. If I use an extreme example, please bear with me.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masangang. That's African way of doing things. You don't even buy clothes before the baby is born. That's how some of us were dealing with the issues. But nowadays they don't. They give the name, they buy clothes before everything and everything. Yes. Before they even know. So, I think, Honorable Masongan, you are correct, because even from the beginning I've been indicating that this is it's work in progress, basically more for information to the members. And I think we will hit the call when times arrives. Members have requested to say, as we will be dealing with the Act, remember, we should all also have an idea of what will be entailed, the proposed regulations, which actually will be able to also assist members as they are dealing with the bill to say, this is how you can be able to improve on the bill that is there. But I wanted to say to Mr. Tsuletsane, on your mandatory referrals of rehabilitation, Section 7, we're talking to foreign license holders or cross-border permit holders, that there will be mandatory rehabilitation. They must attend mandatory rehabilitation. How are we going to I'm just thinking out loud that in the eventuality I'm supposed to leave the country and at the border it's discovered that I've got these demerit points that have been recorded against me, and I'm bound to go and attend mandatory rehabilitation, how do we handle that? Or how do you intend to handle overall situation of foreign driving licenses or permit holders in totality in terms of referrals in this regard?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I need to start with that one, because that is not what it should be. I think that that's something that we need to remove there. We shouldn't be addressing foreign nationals in terms of rehabilitation program. We can't do it. So we'll deal with that. Just to indicate, Chairperson, that some of the things, when you write them at 2 o'clock, this is the consequence. Chairperson, there was an issue of protection of drivers, and I wish to indicate that it's an issue that we as RTIA has been trying to deal with for a number of years. One, we had people who have been nominated, and those people are long, long dead. It was a scam by some people who were trying to make money out of others. However, I recognize that there will be issues where owners of vehicles are nominating drivers. For one reason or another, the person is no longer working there and they nominate that person. I think we need to look at that and apply our mind, because the current regulation, Chairperson, I'll just try to find it. Yeah, the current regulation under regulation 6, under regulation 5.5, it says the successful nominated driver may not submit further nominations and is liable for that infringement and shall incur demerit points applicable to that infringement of offense. So already we had made a ruling on this to say this is what must happen. However, what Honorable Msinga is saying, I think we need to look at that and see how we're going to deal with false nominations, because they are there. It's a fact. Those things will happen. So we'll have to look at that with the team and see what do we propose. The second issue was BMA, Border Management Agency. Chairperson, we, through Mr. Balo here, we've been in contact with BMA. We actually attend their meetings, and recently we requested that we put our issues on their agenda. They call it what is that meeting they call?
The National Steering Committee.
National Steering Committee, so that we become members of that, so that we can deal with some of the issues that are here. I think last week or so, 2 weeks ago, we wrote them a letter to request that. So we have attended one meeting, so we'll be attending some of the meeting to deal with this thing, particularly the issue of foreigners. That's the one that actually pushed us to go there and deal with that issue with them. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, are there further discussions on the matter? Like we indicated, this is for information and it's work in progress. Can we take a 5 minutes comfort break and then come back and come and finalize our programs?
Like hearing me.
Yeah.
No,
Can we start with the meeting? Thank you, honorable members. Remember that yesterday we said we are going to be dealing with the APPs, and part of the things that we would like to deal with will be, we would like to see, make suggestions of the institutions that should come and make presentation on the issues of their APPs. And then we will also, beyond that, make proposals on the program when we come back as to what are the things that we can be able to deal with on the APPs as we believe how we will be approaching towards the budget program of this year. Advocate Nell, if you would take us through the entities that we believe can be able to come and make presentations.
Thank you, Chair. There's a two-page document that we circulated to members yesterday. It's just looking back on how we dealt with the entities last year, we were able to see all of them except the driver license account. And unfortunately, due to time constraints, when we considered BRRR, we only saw the five entities, PRASA, Rail Safety Regulator, SANRAL, SAMHSA, and the Road Accident Fund. Given that we are, again, limited by constraints in the program and the Parliament program, I had a quick look at the department's proposed amendments to their strategic plan and how they've changed their targets on legislation, just to try and see how we will be able to consider which entities should come. We have basically 2 days time frame, really, where we can work with the entities, and we have about 9 slots that we can work with, considering that there will need to be engagement with the entities, and even though we allow them half an hour to present, members might need some more time to engage. That's why we're trying to get to 9 entities. Apart from the 5 that members did see, going through the documents, the other entities that I propose to also include are AXA due to the recent board changes, the security breach issues, as well as how they might be affected by the change in the target dates for finalization of the amendment bill. The PRSA I also proposed. Remember last year there was the issue that STAR was removed, and they were not aware that STAR was removed or delayed. This year, I see the department is bringing STAR back with force and trying to get it implemented, but it still has an impact on their funding mechanisms and how they carry on. RTR, considering members might not want to have RTIA, or members might want, because we are seeing a lot of RTIA. I don't know if members are tired of them yet. But considering the delays in finalizing the RTO bill, we might want to have a short presentation by them. The RTMC, specifically because of the delays in transferring the INATA system from Tasima, as far as I saw, the court should be sitting on the recent or most recent issue tomorrow. The issue was there, from what I saw, that Tasima is not giving RTMC access to the building at this point in time so that they can take over, even though the RTMC has indicated that they are completely able to take over and carry on. So it's codes and all those issues that have to be transferred for managing the system. The cross-border agency, given that there were concerns previously raised on their financials, and there's also an issue on how far they are with the implementation of their turnaround plan. We haven't seen them in quite a while. Members might want to call them as well. The other two that are affected by bill changes is AT&S and SACA, but they don't have a major financial impact at this point in time that has been raised. On the RAF, members did get a recent presentation from them on the financial issues when their bank accounts were frozen. I don't know if members would maybe want to shorten their presentation time, or whether we would look at replacing them with one of the other entities. So there are 10 that we need to have a look at, or should have a look at. The bottom five we might give a shorter time frame, but Valerie and the team, we will rely on members' input in terms of how much time they should be given.
You done, Suzy? Okay, honourable members, there's a proposal. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Two things. First of all, thank you for the comprehensive report, as always. I'm generally in agreement with the proposal. I just would, for the factors of time, which I want to get to next, I want to suggest that for this time round, we perhaps not see the Railway Safety Regulator. Their budget is by far the smallest, and they've proven not to have major issues. I definitely think we should see AXA, the RTMC as well. I don't know about the RTIA, but there are not many. You know, we're kind of looking at the financial implications. Then the next point, Chair, I want to bring up is Valerie has presented a draft program without filling it in. And every year we have the same problem, and that is we run out of time. And what happens is the people at the end of the day kind of get the short end of the stick. So the reality is that year after year, as long as I can remember, we always run out of time. And I want to suggest the following. It's going to be an unpopular suggestion, is that perhaps we look at having more days and longer sessions per entity, because you kind of feel shortchanged, because in the morning you kind of interrogate the entity that's in the morning, and by the afternoon you're kind of rushing through because people have got to leave. So I know that it's been set here for a week, and I don't know what the practicalities and how realistic it is, but I'm suggesting perhaps possibly another additional day where we spread out the entities a lot more, because I see we're trying to cram it again like we've been doing every year, and we have the same problem. Thank you. That's a suggestion. Thank you.
Chairperson, I wouldn't have a problem, but if I understood well, is that we must see the affected. They said the guidelines were said they've started with to mention about the affected entities, and then they also they've guided us with about the proposed ones. So my problem is that in this proposal, I'm not sure about time that we're going to make it, because the proposed one are 10. And to me, all of them are very much important. Let me rest my case there.
Honorable Ramatlaka.
No, Chair. I thought the proposal suggested that we have 9 slots. So there's 9 entities to see. So we need to package the time so that it makes at least equitable call times for all the, depending on the issues. On that basis, I think the Honorable, his side suggests that we need to add a day. There's 3-day program, this. So if you want another day, I think the question is whether that's doable. So if it is doable, that I think let Valerie and them look at that. There is sometimes a sense that we may just be ticking the box, not really getting into So I think that there is a merit in that issue of additional day. If it's doable, I think we could agree that let's do it so that we can at least. Right up front, everybody needs to know the rule of the game. They have, if there's a 30-minute presentation, then they must do that so that we are able to engage. Because as others sometimes really comes in, they just give you 1-hour presentation and you end up not much in it. We are able to debate. So I think I'm sympathetic to that, and let's see if we can have a 4-day, and then we agree with the suggestions from Valerie and them.
I saw your hand again.
I wanted to make a suggestion. If the committee is in agreement for an additional day, and our colleague is saying it's 9, so I'm presuming that. If we say that the railway regulator, for example, is not included, because I see there's 10 in the original in the document, if it's 9, if we add on an additional day, it would mean an average of 2 presentations a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, presumably, and then we'd have to find the odd one out somewhere, maybe the smallest entity or something, and allocate that time, and I think that would give it justice. We then give a 30, and I agree with a colleague, we tell them it's a 30-minute presentation, and it mustn't include the history and the mandate. We know all that. It must be the core of what it's about, because they waste, that becomes an hour because of that, and not unnecessary pictures, and they're trying to impress us with all that nonsense. We actually want the real stuff. So have that, and then we have really allocate the interaction, real decent time. So I'm just trying to just make that suggestion for a way forward. Thank you.
Something about the safety regulator that must be out. You were suggesting, I don't think we should take it out. I think the RSS, I think we should really hear them. I mean, the number of critical issues with respect to the rail.
So do we agree with the proposal that we would see the maybe 2 entities. The other proposal is that we have a longer day instead of a short day. And lastly, adding for us to have 4 days. These are the proposals that are on the table. Honorable De Freitas has made just this proposals that a longer day, 2 entities a day, and the 4th day. These are the things. Can we agree that we will have 2 entities a day and were able to really do proper work. If needs be, we go into the night, and then we add another day so that they can be able to work the modalities as to how we'll deal with the issues. Agreed. Honourable De Freitas?
I just wanted to confirm, when I presume that it's Valerie that then kind of briefs the departments to come in and so forth, if she could make sure, if the committee agrees, that we ask them that it must be succinct what it's about, and we don't want to know, we know what the mandate is, we know about their history, that mustn't be in there. Yes, the real core work of what we're about, because and it's got to be 30 minutes, because the main part of it is you want to interact. We would have read the documents in advance, would have seen their presentation. So I just wanted to reinforce that. Thank you.
Chi, what I'd like to propose to assist, I can draw up a draft template for the presentation for members to consider tomorrow before the committee leaves for the day. Then Valerie will be able to send the template through to the entities in the department so that we can focus on the AG's findings, committee's previous recommendations, and that they need to point out exactly where their changes are in the strategic plans in the APPs and focus on how the legislation and the process of the legislation is affecting them.
Just to remind members that the budget vote debate will start on the 16th of May, and in terms of the draft parliamentary framework, it's only that first week, not only the whole week, it's only the Tuesday of the Tuesday, the 2nd, the 3rd of May, and the 5th of May that it's committee days, Chair, because there's a sitting of the House, questions to the Deputy President on the 4th. So time is very limited, and then on the 9th Tuesday, the House is sitting every day with plenary. So the time that the committee has to meet is the Tuesday, the whole day of the 2nd of May, whole day, the 3rd of May, based on approval by the House Chair, and the Friday, the 5th, also whole day, based on approval by the House Chair. Then the committee only has the morning of the 9th of May, and then that Friday, the whole day again, before the budget vote debate starts on the 16th of May. That is basically the time frames that we are operating in, Chair.
Let's use available time and available days that are there so that we're able to do thorough work in the whole saga. Because I think, to me, what becomes very important is one observation that one has made through the 3 years that one has been here is that you have the APP that is not sticking to the strategic plan to a particular extent. You have the chopping and changing in between the annual plan, like she was indicating. They put stair, they remove stair, they put this thing just like that, which actually then, it doesn't really, these are the documents which have been adopted by Parliament, and when they change, they don't even come to the committee to say we have changed. Parliament must also change this that we have changed. It just falls by the wayside just like that. So these are the things that we should be able to say, but hey, what exactly are the issues? But the other thing is, The Auditor General, when we were with him or with the team of the Auditor General, they have indicated concerns. Due to the fact that issues that have been raised for the past 3 years don't get joy, particularly in some parastatals and also in the department, as to how they get addressed by whoever is supposed to address. And those are the concerns that really the AG has raised for us to can be able to look at. So when we give ourselves time, we will try and deal with most of these issues that we believe have not been dealt with to the best of the department's ability. But also, the Auditor General is starting to say, but your oversight is lacking, because these are the things that are persistently coming back over and over again. It makes us look sluggish also at the same time, because we're doing oversight, but these are the things which continues to burden the department. And for sure, it is incumbent upon us to say now, how do we deal with this type of a situation? Any other thing? Okay.
Since it will be the first time that the AG will have a comprehensive briefing on the APPs of the department, as per the request, does the committee want a whole day with just the AG and the department on that very first day, on the second, or can we accommodate one entity as well?
Yes, Chair. I also sit on a standing committee on the AG. We might have to need to have a discussion with the AG. How far does he have to evaluate our performance? Yes, we are a legislative body. We don't account to him. He is proposing an amendment to the Act now. What Audit Act, public, PAA, because even the opinions of the AG, sometimes entities and departments don't implement them, departments themselves and entities, and he doesn't have the legal force like the other Chapter 9 institutions. It's a concern to the AG. So when he says that there are issues that the department are not adhering or not implementing as much as he has raised them, and he blames the committee, we should have an issue with him, because it doesn't mean that whatever Chapter 9 institutions raises is law. It's subject to debate. He himself is bringing an amendment to our committee that he finds it difficult to get his opinions implemented. So we might have to have a discussion with them, or probably you can raise an issue with your colleague, Comrade Vincent Smith, that Maswanganyi has raised this matter. How do we deal with this issue? Because we don't want institutions to come here and dictate to us that this is how we must do our work, or else we are going to make a finding that this committee is not performing according to what. No, let's agree what is their task in relation. If they want to evaluate us, it must be clear what is the template that they are using to evaluate portfolio committees, because we are not public entities, Chairperson. Because this thing of institutions just coming to make statements and not challenged is not proper. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maswanganyi. We did challenge the AG last year when they were in that kind of a process of evaluating, but unfortunately, not all committees did like the Portfolio Committee on Transport did. Some committees allowed to be evaluated, and that is where we find ourselves, that we were doing things without necessarily saying, but what informs this type of a situation? To me, what becomes very important is for us to say in the Portfolio Committee, AG, these are the things that you are saying the committee, you're looking at the committee within this angle, and then we're able to also bring our very own angle. Like you're saying, it, we don't account to him, so why must he evaluate us? To me, those are the things that we should be able to say, how do we handle them? But when they do come, when we are back, for sure we'd have made a reflection and say, how do we want to see us approaching the whole situation? Because how do we get we are faulted, were found having defaulted or not having done our oversight properly, based on the fact that there are issues that even in the BRRR when you raise them, the speaker would say these are the issues which have been raised, and when the executive does not respond, it becomes a very challenging thing, because if you can go and look at the BRRR of last year or of that other year, there's a whole range of recommendations that have been made, which actually to date they have not been complied with by the executive. What do we do? Honourable members, I think we've done today's work. Tomorrow we are meeting with Santaco and the freight. So freight will not be here. We'll be meeting with Santaco, and hopefully by this time we'll be done tomorrow. And then, oh yes, RTMC, what is that? Tasima. Kinyakor Fatima, Tasima, on RTMC and Shabisa on Tasima matters. Yeah. So that is what we'll be doing tomorrow. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.